Hello, everybody. I'm Nick, and I am an alcoholic. Tony and I were just over here chatting. You know, he's got, I think, one more time he's going to secretary this meeting, and I know I'll miss him, and I'm sure a lot of you guys that like good cookies and stuff are going to miss him, too. My God. Time goes by quick. I'd like to welcome the six newcomers, the four visitors, and those people out there like myself when I first got here that didn't stand up, okay? I was too afraid to stand up. You can still stay sober if you don't stand up and introduce yourself as a newcomer. But sooner or later, you will have to talk to somebody, or you'll drink. That was my experience. Hell, let's see. How honest do I want to get here? Usually when you come up, I've been up here a few times anyway, and usually the truth kind of flows through me, and that's brand new for somebody like me. You know, this thing here that we have here is Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're an alcoholic or think you're an alcoholic, this might be the place for you. You know, there's a spiritual solution to this problem. You know, when the alcohol was removed from my life, you know, things will happen to you when you come around here, you know, and take some steps and talk to people and get a sponsor and things like that. You know, the craving to drink was lifted from me, and that only left one thing there, and that left life for me to deal with. You know, and I, for the first time, probably since I was about 9 or 10 years old, I had to deal with life. What I thought at the time was just me and life. You know, before I always had a cushion of alcohol or drugs I could put in there and help me get through it. Man, my life's completely changed around, and I noticed a lot of new people in here that probably didn't see me when I first got here, but people like George, who's going to be, I think, what, four George tonight? That's cool, man. That's what this thing's all about. That's what this thing's about. You know, we've got people stay sober that long in between drinks, man. You know, for somebody like me that had a hard time at times, I could be forced not to drink. The county of Los Angeles forced me not to drink for a year. It was either that or they had given me a suspended prison sentence because I used to like to shoot guns and things like that in apartment complexes and all that stuff while I was under the influence of things. That's something, too. If you're out there, you know, I had never gotten into trouble per se or arrested, let's put it that way, unless I was under the influence of alcohol and or drugs or glue or gasoline or lacquer or something like that. And finally, after about, I drank and used for 27 years, and probably 20 of that was pretty hardcore. Never thought I had a problem. That's why when I mentioned it at first here that, you know, if you think you're an alcoholic, you think you might have some problem with, I really never thought about it, you know. And at the end of my drinking, it got to the point where I had just accepted my life as like, well, here's how I'm going to plan my little trip to the supermarket. I'm going to, I'll start off with some coffee and Kahlua and have a couple shots of vodka and maybe a beer for the road. And I'd have to either take some or buy some at the store for the ride home. That's how it got for me. See, they have a boat show going on down at the Prune Yard this weekend, and I used to crawl around down there a few times. A few of my outings were down at the Prune Yard. I was crawling through the apartment. An ex-wife left me and a buddy out there kind of laying in a planter or something one night, you know. And it's nice to be able to go down there and go there sober. You know, I haven't had a drink in over 2.5 years. I haven't had any drugs or anything like that either. And like I said, the longest I went before was a year, you know, and that was due to fear. You know, and I jogged, and I jogged and got drunk, and I jogged and I fixed drugs, and I did that stuff. But you know, like I say, I had questions come up in my mind that, well, you know, geez, I jog and I stopped for a year, and I went to church last Sunday and things like that, and a lot of that stuff was a stumbling block for this stubborn guy as he went through his life. And finally, at the end, and when I was arrested the last time. See, I hadn't had a drunk driving since 78 also, so that was things that helped me out too. You know, I didn't get arrested for crawling down the street or anything like that either. So just these little things that I got here, it was just, you know, being arrested for some minor type assault charge and no different than the other ones. But something happened that time. You know, I had one of my ex-wives had mentioned something to me during my last like year of drinking that, geez, Nick, I've gone to this AA thing, and you may have a problem drinking. Why don't you think about that, you know? And it's weird how we come in here, and like, actually, both of my ex-wives helped carry the message to me, and one has decided that she really isn't an alcoholic anymore after she's done the steps and had a sponsor and did all that stuff. It's, you know, she may be back, and believe it or not, today she's in my prayers. It's about as close as I keep it, in my prayers. But we can, you know, the book tells us we can recover. You know, the book tells us we have a spiritual, mental, physical disease. You know, and if we fix the spiritual part, you know, and for an alcoholic, which has been proven over the years that, you know, you take these steps, you take them with somebody, you have a spiritual awakening. These things happen, you know, and you can recover from the disease of alcoholism. And then for somebody like me, you have life to deal with after that. I was also talking with Tony, you know, before coming in here that, geez, I was hoping that the mood I've been in lately that, and that's something I learned too, things aren't always great, you know, but I don't have to drink. I don't have to use drugs. Things aren't always great. You know, he had given me a slip of paper to remind me a while back about the date and stuff. You know, I like how we do that. And I was saying, I knew it was today I was going to speak and come here and share. And I said, well, hopefully, maybe it's like 2 weeks from now. You know, and I said, well, you know, when I'm in the disease, I don't do things like this. I'm not a responsible individual. I don't really care if you don't like me or something like that if I don't do that. But I'm here because I showed up here tonight because I wanted to. You know, my head was telling me, geez, maybe you can come up with an excuse or something. You know, because I haven't been feeling that great, and I know it's going to pass. That's one of the great things that I've learned in this program. That it'll pass, you know. If we go through these little waves of life, these things happen, man. And it's how well I'm connected with God. This is, you know, from the third step on, we start talking about God. You know, two up, we're talking about higher powers and things like that. But we'll get you with God, you know. And God can be anything you want God to be, or anybody you want God to be, as long as it's not you. As long as it's a power greater than yourself. You know, there's a spiritual solution that's been proven for years. Proven on millions of people that you can stay sober through a spiritual solution. And that's where Mike's talking tonight. And you know what? I like Mike, and I think he likes me. He's talked to me a few times. And you know, Mike looks a little different than I do. I look a little different than Mike. You know what? But we both suffer from the same disease. You know, we have a lot in common. Once we break these barriers of whether you're a new person and you're breaking barriers down or whatever, geez, we got a lot in common. We have a lot of experiences, strengths, and hopes to share with one another, you know, and Mike and I have done that. And the new people, you know, you don't have to drink today. And like I said, the six of you that stood up and those that didn't, man, believe it or not, we know what you feel like sitting there, you know. You may seem hopeless. I think if you're going to, for me anyway, I had to be hopeless to recover. You know, I had to be desperate. I didn't have much to lose when I got here. You know, I really had lost the family already. I had a 73 Buick. Still have it today. Didn't have much to lose. Didn't have, you know, all my self-respect, my self-esteem, all that was gone. You know, you stop cars on Bascom or you crawl and shopping centers and things like that, kind of lose that stuff. I don't have to do that today. And most of the time I feel good about myself. And there's times, you know, that a lot of the pitfalls of the disease, you know, is, yeah, I've heard it said a lot, you know, where we feel either less than or greater than. It's hard. My girlfriend and I were talking about this. It's hard to feel, you know, right there, get that equal balance, you know. And I believe when I'm connected with God, those things happen. I'm either not feeling too well about me, or I feel a little better than everybody else. And we're really all the same, you know. And I don't care how old you are. I don't care how much you drank or whatever, you know. We've got a lot in common. How you doing, Mike? Good to see you. So everybody, you know, just, you know, hang around, keep coming back, and it works if you hang loose with it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. And I define myself as an alcoholic as it does in the big book. And it says in the third chapter that we are men and women that have lost the ability to control our drinking. It doesn't say anything about how much we drank, how often we drank, what happened when we drank, that we had to go to penitentiaries, you know, lose our business. And that's important for me to remember because I did not go to penitentiaries and, you know, I didn't run guns. You know, I wasn't married, so I didn't go rip through my wife's life. You know, I came in here with a house and some cars and a boat, and I thought my life was pretty good. And so it's good for me to remember that I have lost the ability to control my drinking. That's all I need to remember. You know, when I got the phone call to ask to speak tonight, first thing that came to my mind is how I could get out of it. And the second thing that came to my mind is I've listened to a lot of speakers, and this is my first time that I'm going to be able to speak for 55 minutes. I think that's how long I get. And I was thinking about the people that I've heard and how they went about their stories. And, you know, a lot of people that I hear that speak for a long period of time have a lot of war stories about penitentiaries, running guns, large amounts of drugs in their lives, and things like that. And that just isn't the case for me. I didn't come in because those are the things that were happening in my life. You know, like I said, I came in pretty good. At least I thought at the time. What happened for me is I came in behind a run of some bad luck, I thought. In the last 9 months of my drinking, I accumulated 4 DUIs. I never thought they were that bad because they were small ones, 1.3, 1.4. At the time, it was 0.10 for legal alcohol, and I just didn't think. I just thought it was really a run of bad luck. And how I got here was I thought that maybe if I went to a 28-day program, got a certificate, I could go to court and maybe stay out of jail because I knew I was going to see a little jail time. And so what happened for me is I did. I went to the 28-day program, and the first night I was there, I heard a guy chaired the meeting because he had to go to a meeting every night. He's a member here at Saturday Night Live, named Al B, and he talked about, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it was like today for him. And the gentleman that was chairing that meeting was a clean-cut, well-dressed, life was working. What used to be like for him was, you know, he had long hair, he lived on the street occasionally, he had a bad drug problem, he had tattoos, and that wasn't the guy that I saw there, Sharon. And I don't know what it was, but it intrigued me. So what happened is you know, I wanted to find out a little bit more. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stop drinking. I didn't think I had a drinking problem when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I had a little trouble with the law, and I was trying to shoot one more angle. I grew up in a really good family. I'm not one of those guys that came from, I don't think, a dysfunctional family, though it had some pros and cons. I came from two loving parents. My father was very successful in high school and college in sports, and he brought that success into his business life, and he was very successful. He was a loving, caring man. He never beat us. He never tried to control us. He always tried to talk to us and communicate, and he always treated all the kids as an equal. My mom, if you knew her, I wouldn't even have to tell you about it. She's just a loving, caring, warm lady. She loved me unconditionally. I ripped and roared through that lady's life the last couple of years of my drinking. And, you know, I kept her up, I'm sure, a lot of nights. She would never admit that, but I know I did. I ripped and roared through her life. And she just loved me unconditionally. You know, and it's kind of frustrating because, you know, you think about all the good things that happened in my life, and I'm still in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why it's for me, I can accept that this is a disease. Alcohol affects me different than it affects normal people that consumes it. When I drink, I do dumb things. I didn't realize it at the time. I thought when I drank, you know, I was just a wild young man. I came here at 26, and, you know, a lot of my friends did the same things I did. I just got caught. So I really had a big denial. I come from a family of 8 children. I don't know. I didn't know this when I was out there drinking and using, but through going through inventories and things, I found that, you know, I always strived and always struggled to get attention. And I know with 8 children and 2 parents, you know, attention, you know, you try to get as much attention. Everybody's fighting for attention. And my family, they always have to be the best. So my family is a very intense group. They always have to be at the top of whatever they do. The first time, and I didn't know this at the time, and I, you know, there was no time in my life that I remembered and said, oh, this is what goes on in my life. But through inventories again, I found, you know, when my first resentment, in fact, came when I was 5 years old. I was diagnosed, I had a cancer in my back, and, you know, you're in the hospital, and my cousin died of it. They caught mine in time, and I remember in the hospital, I got visited a lot from my family and my cousins, and I got a lot of attention. And I remember coming home from the hospital, and you know, everybody was there to welcome me home, and you know, and I was getting a lot of attention, and I liked that. Again, like I said, I never remembered that this went on until later in sobriety. But I remember I was home about 15 minutes, and everybody was surrounded around me, and we were talking. I was getting a lot of attention, like I've stated, and. My sister came running in the house, and she just ran across a street that just got just newly paved and tarred. And she was running across the street in bare feet, and she burned her feet. And she came in, and you know, all of a sudden the attention came from me to her, and everybody surrounded her, and you know, oh, are you okay? Da da da. Got her all taken care of, and. You know, took her to the hospital, and the attention all went to her. And it might not make a whole lot of sense to you, but it is for me. And it was important to me to realize that all my life, what happened was I got into the rut that, you know, through grammar school. I wasn't a great student. I struggled in school. How I got attention was through sports. I was born with a lot of natural ability, and I did well at sports. I was always... In grammar school, MVP, in the tournaments, I was all league. And I remember I always got a lot of attention when I was doing these things. And when I did good things, you know what? I felt good. I felt good. I felt like I was somebody or I was important or something like that. It's kind of like now and how I run my life after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and working these steps when I add to people's lives. When I'm not into self, you know, and I'm adding to people's life, I find that I find a little peace in my life. But anyway, back to, you know, growing up, again, like I said, I struggled in school, but you know what? I offset that by working real hard at sports and being, you know, real good at that. And I got a lot of attention behind that. And that went on into other things. It created a problem for me where everything I did, I had to be the best at, and when I did things, I never felt good enough. I never felt that I did it to the best, and it always affected me. You know, my first drunk was at 9 years old, my sister's wedding. The bridal table and the groom and the table, you know, they put the champagne and all the glasses. I was 9 years old, and I ran and went down the whole L-shaped thing, table, and drank all the champagne. And, you know, I got real active. I started dancing and carrying on. And you know what? To tell you the truth, it was great. It was real, real great for about a half an hour until it started to hit me. They were serving dinner, and I just didn't make it to dinner. I went to the bathroom, and I passed out next to the toilet. It wasn't real, real good. I remember they carried me off, you know, an hour and a half into the reception. They carried me out in front of all my family, my friends. Not my friends, but my parents' friends. There was about 300 guests there, and it really wasn't real good to my for my parents. I remember the next morning... I didn't feel all too well. And my sisters and brothers and my mom was sitting around and we were laughing, or they were laughing, and you know, it was kind of cute, I guess, a 9-year-old running around like an idiot. And but I remember my father never said anything to me. My father wasn't the type to beat you up with anything, and he never said, you know what, you really screwed up, I hope that never happens again, nothing. The man just never said nothing about it. He was kind of cold to me, but he never said nothing. And I didn't drink, obviously, for a while. The second time that I can remember I got drunk, it was a bunch of us that played on the basketball team. It was before a tournament, and I stole a bottle of wine from my parents' house, and we all sat around and drank. They all sipped it, and I guzzled it. And I got a little drunk, and I went to the game drunk. And I made a complete jackass out of myself. It wasn't that I thought about it or anything. My mom was very, very embarrassed, I remember, because she yanked me out. And my family never made scenes, but my mom made a scene after that game. She grabbed me and tore me out of there, because every time the ref made a bad call, I got up in his face. You know, I'm 14 years old. I was making a complete jack. I was drunk, but nobody knew it. And, you know, those were really the two incidents that I can think were that were real, real bad in my life. That up till high school, we played ball and we drank and got drunk. I could always drink more than everyone else. I was a junior in high school, and my family, my mom and dad, took my sisters and brothers to Mazatlan for a couple of weeks. And it was during the holidays, and I was playing basketball at the time in high school, and so I didn't go because I had a commitment. And I remember my parents, I was 17 years old, and they left me the car and some money in the house. And of course, you know, in high school you throw parties. The parents are gone, you throw parties. And what happened is, the night of the party, we played Bellarmine, and something happened with one of the players on the other team. His girlfriend liked me, and Bellarmine beat us that night, and he was in our face, in my face. He kept getting in my face all game, and at the party we were all getting drunk, and I was getting everybody going. You know, Bellarmine, it's against Mitty, it was a big rivalry. And, so I got everybody going, and I talked two guys into going over there and to this guy's house, and I was too chicken to go over there and vandalize the guy's house, but these guys were willing, and they went over, and someone from the party called their house, and the cops were there waiting for them. And what happened for me is, the party went on, and it was a good night, and the next Monday in school, the principal of our school caught wind of it, and the police came, talked to them about what happened, and they got the whole story. And make a long story short, they suspended me from school for 3 months because of throwing the party and instigating this situation. It was real, real tough. And I remembered I threatened the principal's life. I did, because, see, my father was very important to me. He was my best friend, and I always strive to please my mother and father. I tried to do the right thing all my life, and many times I fell short of that, and it was I was very stressed over it. And I remember the principal saying, you know, I'm going to call your mother and father, and I told the guy, if you do, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to beat your ass. Well, you know, 17-year-old, I thought, you know, maybe he wouldn't do it. Well, he called anyway. By the time I got home, my father was waiting for me at the door and told me that I was suspended for what took place in that office. And, you know, I got kind of really messed up behind that stuff. I let my father and mother down one more time. I embarrassed the family. And I felt like a piece of garbage. And I remember there was a big, for about a month, there was a big hoo-la in the family. And, of course, when you get in trouble, I don't know about you guys, but when I did, boy, I like to turn the tables. And my father was a very loving man. He was never a talker. He said, don't tell me, show me. And he was the same way. He said he never told me he loved me, but he showed me in a million ways. And anyway, I got all emotional one night, and I talked to one of my sisters, my second older sister, Marcia, and I were talking. I said, you know, Dad's never told me. I don't know if he loves me. And that was bullshit, but of course I want to put the guilt on him and change the table. And what happened was my sister took me into the family room, and my father was sitting there, and my sister said, go ahead and tell him. Go ahead and tell him. And, of course, I couldn't. I went over by the piano, and I started, you know, kind of crying. I got, you know, tears in my eyes, and my father goes, what, what, what? And my sister goes, he doesn't think you love him. My father, I've only seen my father cry one other time besides that. That was when his sister died, and my father got tears in his eyes, and he cried, and he said, of course I love you, and I hope you know that. And I said, of course I know that, Dad. And I got hard like we are. And I said, I know that. I was just, you know, messed up. And he goes, you know, I do love you and all this stuff. And you know, the beautiful thing about that is my father died a month later after that day. He was my best friend. And God was working in my life back then because my father and I got to talk before he passed away. Besides those few incidents, I was relatively a good kid. I had a hard time in school, but I always got C's and maybe a B or two. I got suspended, like I said, from high school, and my father was still alive, and he asked me where I wanted to go. And you know, I always thought it'd be cool to be in Santa Cruz, and we had a place over there. So I said I didn't want to go to Saratoga High School, because I knew a lot of people and I felt embarrassed of what happened. So I said, I'd like to go over to school in Santa Cruz. I could hang out at the beach and be cool and finish my junior year over there. And my father said, okay. I don't remember the whole situation, but anyway, I went to school over there. and as when I was in school there, my father passed away. And I remember the night he passed away. It was 4:35 in the morning. The phone rang. They called the family down to the hospital, and my father was dead. And my sisters and brothers and my mom, that when we're a very close family, sat around with the priest, held hands around my father's bed, and we said a few prayers and said goodbye to Dad. And at the hospital, it was in Napa. My dad was in a tournament when he had his aneurysm. And they gave my mom a room to stay in so she could stay close. And my uncle had a place up there, and the rest of the family stayed there. And so anyway, after we said goodbye to Dad and said the prayers and stuff, we all went in the room. And I remember my sisters and brothers and my mom freaked out. They were screaming and crying and kicking the walls and just nutting. And I remember myself, I sat back and, you know, I was taught that you're here for a reason. You know, you're here to bear your cross, and then when your time's up, God takes you. And this is just the way I have a strong belief. And for whatever reason, I thought couldn't show emotion. I was sitting there and I was grabbing my sisters and saying, knock it off, this isn't how Dad would want it to be. And, you know, and I was just shut down. You know, I wasn't able to grieve. My best friend in the whole world just left. I was 17 years old, and I was angry, and I had no way to vent it. Anyway, we came back from Napa and went back to school, and things went on. You know, the drinking didn't, you know, have a problem. About 8 months into that, because I stayed, you know, I finished the year, and I stayed over there. I got invited to this dance or something like that, and I was introduced to cocaine. And my life just took off from there. I found something that I liked. It gave me up. It made me feel good. And for the next year and a half, 2 years, I used drugs, cocaine, on a daily basis. I lived at the beach house. I moved home, finished my senior year back at Mitty, and then I moved back and went to school, or I tried to go to school over at Cabrillo College. I lived at our house over there, and I lived by myself. And I partied, surfed, and drank every day for a year and a half. When I moved over there, I had a boat, a BMW, and a four-wheel drive, and a brand-new stereo I got from a house stereo that I got from for graduation. And a year and a half later of that kind of behavior in my life, my boat was gone, my BMW was gone, and my truck was gone, and my stereo was gone. The guy that owned it was my roommate, my coke dealer. I moved him in. And that's just the truth for me. And what happened was one night I woke up. I mean, I didn't wake up. I was up all night. And I pulled up an all-nighter again. And I was about 21 years old, and I was walking out on our deck, and I just said, I have to stop this. I mean, everything I had was taken away from me. And that morning, I packed everything up, and I moved back over the hill to this side. I moved back into my mom because she got a different place to live. She moved out of the house that I grew up in. I got back into school, and my life started to get okay again. I went to school. I was doing the right thing. I played basketball for De Anza, and life was going okay. My second year at De Anza, you know, my family was making a lot of money. They were all having nice cars and houses, and I figured I don't need any more schooling. I need to get back into the business world and make some money. I was 22 at the time. And so what I did is I got into the insurance business. That's my whole family's in the business. And I got in the business, and my first 2 years I worked hard, and I was successful. I made a lot of money, and I started to accumulate things. I bought my first house. I had my car. I got a boat. And things started to happen for me again. I started to get all my materialistic things back. And for some weird reason, I didn't feel okay. I started, you know, about 3 years into my insurance business, I found that I started to drink a little bit more, and I started to get a little tight on my bills. And when I got tight on my bills, I'd go to my mom and I would, you know, scream and yell until I got some extra money to take care of my bills. Because, see, I was using all the money I made at the insurance in my business to drink, use, and look like the millionaire playboy. You know, I always portrayed myself as something, and the more I said it, the more I had to live up to this kind of lifestyle, and the more my life got insane, the insanity behind the way I was living. At the time, again, my mom kept writing me checks, and it kept covering the bills, and I kept living that life. I did the relationships well. My first girlfriend was for 3.5 years, and I left her because it was get married or get on, and I didn't want to get married. There was too much left in life, so I moved on, and I got with this next girlfriend, and you know, it was a great relationship. You know, I told her what to do and how to do it, and she did it, and she didn't complain a lot, and that's just the truth. You know, if she didn't, I made her feel like shit. That's just the truth, as sick as that may be. You know, you guys laugh about it, and I still feel, you know, frustrated by the way I treated her. And, I was good to her for the first 2 years. At least I was loyal to her. I don't know how good I was to her. But after about 2 years of drinking and using, and not so much using because I stopped using drugs back when I left Santa Cruz, but I drank a lot. When I stopped doing the drugs, my alcohol just took off, my alcoholism. And I got kind of like, she wasn't fixing me anymore. She wasn't making me feel okay anymore. So what happened, of course, is I started to go out to the bars with the guys and start flirting and cheating on my girlfriend. And that went on, and you know, I knew what I was doing. I justified it in my mind. I know today that you know, the more I did that crap, the more I drank to make me feel better. That's just the way it is. What happened was it was in September. I got caught. I was at Sam's Log Cabin on the Alameda, and I went to lunch at 11 o'clock, and I was trashed by about 2, and I called. I called one girl to pick me up, and she was bitching and yelling at me. So I said, fine. And I hung up with her, and I called this other girl. I called my girlfriend first. She bitched me out or something. And so I said, fine. I hung up on her, And I called the other girl. And she was asking me too many questions, and I started ripping into her. I told her, fine, I don't need you to pick me up either. And so I called my brother-in-law to come get me. And he came and got me, and we stopped off, got some beers, and he was going to take me back. But before he took me home, he took me by his brother-in-law's house. And his brother-in-law at the time had about 8 months in sobriety. He had a drinking and drug problem. He's still sober today. And I was trash, and I was embarrassed, and Dom wanted him to come and talk to me. And he took me out there, and I said, yeah, I'm kind of screwed up. Life's getting kind of unmanageable. I've accumulated all these DUIs, and I'm in a little trouble. And he said, I went to Montevilla, and it changed my life. And so what happened for me was about 5 days later, I guess, I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. 5 days later, with all the stress of everything, and I knew I couldn't drink anymore because if I got another DUI, at this time I had four, if I got another one, they were just going to take away, lock me up and throw away the key. So I didn't drink for those 5 days, and it was a Tuesday, and I went in the office, and bills were coming in, and I didn't have the money for the bills, and my phone bill was late, and my sister's office was right next door, and I went in there, and I said, hey, could you take me to this place called Montevilla in Morgan Hill? I think I got a drinking problem, and I need to find some help. And so what happened is she took me to Montevilla. And again, I don't know if I know that I didn't think I had a drinking problem. I just had to just get the heat off me. I had to do something about the court system, and I thought that certificate would help. My mom was getting a little frustrated at my behavior. My sisters and brothers were getting a little frustrated at my behavior. Like I said, my girlfriend, oh, I forgot to tell you, the two girls I called also got me to get to the program was my girlfriend and the girl I was seeing at the time, instead of coming to get me, they met me, they went over to talk to my sister next door to my office. They didn't know both of them. I called both of them. They both show up there. And they're both crying because I just obviously ripped into them. And they didn't know about each other. The girlfriend knew about Luann, but Luann didn't know about her. And all of a sudden, the can of worms was open. And they started swapping stories. And Donna said that I'd been seeing him for 6 months. And Luann was screaming and crying. And it was a war in the house. I mean, in the office. And I didn't know this until I met up with Luann the next day. And that helped me make the decision that I thought maybe if, because she was a little frustrated with me, maybe if I went into this program and told her, you know what, I have been drinking too much. I've been, going out and, I get drunk and, these things happen. And what I want to do, and I don't suggest this to the newcomers, when I got clean with Luann before I went into that program, I figured I'm going to go get sober, and I told her it was because I want to save this relationship. But before I go in, I want to get clean. And so I told her about everything that I've been doing, about the girls and the cheating on her, and it wasn't real good. It wasn't real good. I heard her more and more. It was just icing on the cake. She was sick and tired of my behavior. But it was like she wasn't taking me back after that. What happened is, I asked my sister to take me down to Montevilla. I think the motive was is just to get the heat off. Just get the heat off me for a while. And I thought 28 days to go in there, and then I was going to try to stay sober. I was going to come to meetings and try to stay sober for 6 months. That was what my sentence was. That's the sentence I put on myself. And so what happened is I went into the program, and like I said earlier, Al B chaired the meeting, and he shared about his feelings and about his fears and about how he lived life and how he felt and how he reacted to things. And now Al and my story are completely different. But you know what? I felt the things that he was talking about. I felt that inadequacy, the fear of what's going to happen, And so I heard him, and he talked about the solution and what he's gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous and how his life has turned around. And he was just getting married. He had a good job, and things seemed to go good for him. And like I said, that intrigued me. And for the next 27 days, I didn't hear another thing in an AA meeting, and I went to one every night. And while I was in there, it was during the span of Halloween, and 2 weeks into the program, I remember calling my girlfriend, and I found out that she met this guy, and he was over at the house, and that flipped me out. And what happened was, you know what? I did check myself out of the program. I had to get home to fix the problem, you know, tell her that, you know, I'm changing, you know, it's not going to be like that anymore. And what happened is I checked myself out of the program, but I didn't have a car there. And it was in Morgan Hill, and I lived back here. And what happened is I started to call people to come pick me up, and nobody would come pick me up. And I called a couple people in my family, and they wouldn't pick me up. And I finally called my sister Margie, and she laid into me. She told me a lot of truth, and she said that I had, you know, I have a problem, and you're just throwing your life away, and can't you finish this and just finish it for the 28th, and just made me feel like garbage. So what happened is I had to go back to the administration and beg to be allowed to let in back into the program, because after listening to my sister, you know what, that was just one. The rest were going to tell me the same thing, that this is just one more thing in your life that you're screwing up. And by this time I was starting to screw up a lot of things in the last year of my drinking and using. But anyway, what happened is one of the counselors kind of took a liking to me, and she brought me out, and she talked to me and talked about relapse and all this stuff. And I'm going, yeah, that's what's happened. I told them whatever they wanted to hear to get me back in that program so I could finish the program and, you know, make my family happy. And what happened is they let me back in, and I stayed long enough, and I checked out of the 28 day program with my full 28 days done. And when I was there, everybody talked about this group called Saturday Night Live. And of course, in my life, I had to be with the best kind of people. And AA Saturday Night Live was the elite. So when I got out, that's what I was told. That was what the rumor was down in Morgan Hill. And I thank God it was, because it's a young people's group. And what happens when I got out of there, it was a Saturday night, and I came to a meeting that night instead of going out with the boys. You know, most people, I would think, yeah, at 28, I'm going to go out and get wild. But I knew I didn't want to drink until this court system was over. So what I did is I went to that meeting that night, and it was in the old room, and the place was jam-packed, from people that were about 15 years old to about 80 years old, and everybody was smiling and having a good time that night. And the topic that night was, why do you keep coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous? And people had some good things to share, and they called on me. Now, don't forget, I did not want to get sober. I just wanted to get the heat off. But, you know, I thought, you know, I could, I didn't have anything to say, but I came up. And I came up, and I looked out, and everybody at 8 o'clock at night on a Saturday night, kids my age and younger and older, were all sitting there laughing and having a great time. And I looked down, and I said, you know, I just got out of Montevilla. And I got 28 days. At the time, I had a little more than 28 days because I had a few days before I went in there. But I said, if there was a reason why I keep coming back in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's because you guys are here on a Saturday night, and you're not drinking, and you're not trying to, you know, chase women. And that's the thought I had at the time. And you guys seem like you're enjoying yourself. And that baffled me. You know, Saturday night, listen to a bunch of people tell about their terrible life. You know, it just didn't make sense to me. But anyway, they were smiling at, and that's what I shared, and I sat back down. And what happened for me is for the next They told me 90 meetings in 90 days. And what I did is I went, because I didn't want to drink until the court thing was over. And they said, you know, if you keep coming back, you know, and don't drink, you know, it's going to be okay. And what happens, I started to go to at least a meeting a day to two meetings a day, sometimes three meetings a day. And I heard people like Nick. And that's why I kept coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't because people like myself that had jobs and stuff or looked good. It was the people that had the tattoos and the longer hair coming in here talking about their feelings and talking about their fears. You know, I grew up and you didn't share that stuff. You know, you just didn't share that stuff. You know what? You counted to 10 and you went on with your life. And through those meetings that I went to, you know, people with tattoos and people that wear more Harley Davidsons and the tough-looking guys that I'd walk across the street when I saw them, I'd go around them, were up here sharing about how they have fears and they have all the stuff that I was feeling. And then again, they talked about working in these steps and they talked about talking to another alcoholic and things like that, and they found the peace and they found a power working in their lives. And you know what I had, I went to church since I was 2 weeks old. I knew about God. I had a good relationship, I thought, with God. I didn't have a punishing God. My father said, you know what, you can't do wrong unless you know what's wrong in your own heart. You know, if you don't like everything said at church, just take what's good and leave the rest. That's the way I was brought into religion. And I went to church every day. And I thought I had a good understanding. I don't know. I thought I had, you know, I believed in God and, you know, I knew He was going to save me someday. And what happened for me was, you know, these people talking about this power and having Him work in His life. And you know what? Honestly, you know, I kept coming back and I kept listening to this, but I did not want to commit. I did not want to get a sponsor. I did not want to get into the steps, but I wanted to keep coming back. You know, because you know what, whatever was happening, whatever I was hearing and whatever I was listening and trying to instill in my life, if I could understand it and instill in my life, it was working in my life, you know. And I was 9 months sober and I was at a men's meeting and this guy saw me and he came up and he asked me if I was working with anyone. And what happened is he asked me if he could work for me. He could work with me. And one more time, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself because I was incapable of asking people for help when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was we got into the steps and we were working together for about 2 months. And mind you, I never showed feelings, emotions. When my father's May 6th came, and that's when my father passed away, I would be drunk the month before and the month after. Okay, I did not deal well with this time of the year. And I remember I was sober about 9-10 months, and May 6th was coming up, and I was just nuts. And I started the steps with this guy. I was on, I think, 8 and 9 at the time. And what happened is it was May 5th, and I was just crawling the walls. And I grabbed this guy, and I said, you know, I need to spend some time with you. I got to talk to you. I'm nutting. And I said, can I see you tonight? He goes, well, I'm busy. I go, can I meet with you first thing in the morning? And he said, no, I'm busy all day tomorrow. And I fucking took off, pissed off, got in the car, and I was driving down Hamilton Avenue, and this was God working in my life again. There was the Baja on the left, where I drank a lot, and 17 to Las Gatos, where my sister lived. And what happened for me is, unknown to me, my car on autopilot just got on the 17 and drove over to my sister's house. And what happens, I went into her and I'm crying and I'm miserable because I don't have anything to put in my body to make the feelings go away. I was sober. Okay, I was insane, but I was sober. And what happened was I went in there and I'm crying and I go, Mary, Mary, and Mary comes walking out. Now, my wife, my sister's married with two kids. And it was 6 o'clock at night and that's when they're all home. And what happened that night is they were, Brian, my brother-in-law, and the two boys were gone. And my sister was there, and she goes, Mike, what's wrong? What's wrong? And what happened that night is we got to sit there and we got to talk. And I cried, and she cried, then we laughed, and then we cried, and we laughed, and we cried. And that was the first time that I ever got to share any emotions. And what happened for me, and it wasn't with another alcoholic, but I heard about sharing. And sharing the secret and taking the power out of him. That's what I did with my sister, and I stayed sober. And what happened is, after that, I was about a year sober, And a friend of mine, I was thinking that, you know, I've been sober a year now, and I don't know if I'm an alkie, and I knew I was, but I didn't know if I was done drinking. And what happened is a friend of mine and I and his family was up at the beach house, and another friend came up, and he just celebrated a year sobriety a couple weeks before me. And what happened is he went out right after his first birthday. And what happened is he was drinking, and we were on the barbecue, and after he went to the bar where a girl that I was kind of seeing, and she bought, you know, he was drinking, and he bought her, he didn't have any money, so she was a waitress there and bought him drinks, and what happened is he tried to pick up on her, and a whole bunch of things happened that night. And then the next morning I woke up, and I shared with a good friend of mine, Mario, what transpired and everything, and what happened is, and I saw myself in this guy, and he told me, you know, that could be you. And after I got home that weekend, you know, I searched for a sponsor that I could work with, and how I found my sponsor. Oh, by the way, when that guy, my first sponsor that I had to work with, he wasn't there for me when I was so fucked up, I fired the guy. You know, I said, I can't trust this program, you know, this guy's a prick. And I hated the guy. I wanted to rock his world. I was angry. And I didn't want to work with anybody until, like I said, a year of sobriety and this incident happened in my life. And so when I got back, I was living with a guy, and I said, I got to find a sponsor. And he told me about his sponsor. And his sponsor was an ex-professional baseball player by the name of Danny. And you know what? I'm in the sports. You know what? This guy will relate to me. And what happened is the guy I was living with took me to this guy, to a meeting where he was at, so I could meet him. I met him. He got up and he shared, and he was awesome. And so after the meeting, I asked him to work. I'd be my sponsor, and he said, sure. And what happened is I got started in the steps. And, you know, like I said, at the first step, you know, it was tough for me, but it was just because I was in the denial, you know. When I came to the realization, because when I drank, I didn't always pick up the drink and drink all night. Sometimes I could put it down, but most of the time I couldn't. And it says in there in the third chapter that we are men and women that have lost the ability to control our drinking. And I could accept that I was powerless over alcohol, because that was true for me. And as far as my life is being unmanageable, I thought, you know, only kind of a little bit. I had problems with my ex-girlfriend, and she didn't come back to me yet. And I had these DUIs, and so my life obviously was unmanageable to some extent. Of course, I wanted to, you know, I wasn't real careful with this guy. I didn't tell him about the bills that were backed up and all that other stuff, but my life was real unmanageable. And, you know, we got into step two, and I had a problem with step two, and I became to restore me to sanity, and my sponsor, you know, because I said, shit, if I restore my sanity, I got to be insane, and I didn't think I was insane, and he said, well, look at your actions, you know what, you got a DUI, and then you went out and you started drinking again, you got in the car and you did the same thing, and you did the same thing, and then the idea of, you know what, you keep doing that, expecting different results, so I got through that. And in step three, you know what? In step three, I had a God. It says, turn my will, my life over God as I understood him. Well, I didn't understand God. Okay? I knew God. I believed in God. But you know what? I'm down and out, and I didn't understand him. So what I made there in step three the first time around is made a decision to go on with the steps to maybe find out an understanding of my God. And what happened for me is I worked through the fourth and fifth, and a lot of emotions about Dad came up, and I found out that the root of all my problems were me. And, you know, that was a hard one to swallow. I always thought it was you people or my mom or her. But the reality is the fourth and fifth step told me that all my problems were me. And I got through some of that crap, and I got on with the steps. And what I found out is if I add to people's lives instead of worrying about me and my needs and go out of my way, you know, life just seems to work. You know, life has been good for me since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've had my ups and downs. I know whenever I'm down and out today, first thing I do is pick up the phone. And I call my sponsor, I tell him what's going on in my life. And sometimes I tell him to go get screwed. I tell him the AA to go get screwed. And, you know, they're a bunch of losers. And he just laughs at me. And he lets me just spill at the mouth and barf all over him. He just laughs. He says, okay, right on. He goes, why don't you get to a meeting and talk to a newcomer? And if you want to drink after that, go ahead and do it. That's from the intense ones. And other times when I just have problems and I call him, I say, this is going on in my life. You know what he says? Pick up the book, the big book, read a few things, slow your mind down, and then call some of the guys that you sponsor. What he does is he keeps telling me to get, in a polite way, to get my head out of my ass. Get me out of myself. He tells me to get out and try to add to people's lives instead of worrying about poor me. And what's happening is I've been doing that. And I take his suggestions, I take the action, and what happens is I start to feel okay. I feel, and I start to feel like the problem isn't that big. See, in my own mind, I manifest a little hole, and I'll make a grand canyon out of it. I do that. All my life, like I've shared many times, all I've ever wanted to do is make my mom and dad proud of me. I spent my life trying to do that. And since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out that there's nothing that they're telling me, great, and I love you, and all that shit's going to fix me. What you guys tell me is I got to find out what makes me happy. I got to find out what I need to do to make life bearable for me. And what that is stop lying, manipulating, cheating, and lifestyle like that. And that's what I've been trying to do. And I found a little peace and balance in my life. It's not all the time. You know, I'm married. I got into this program, and I was a year and a half sober, and I was 13-stepped by a lady with more time than I was. And, at the time, what happened is we were dating, and, I didn't tell her I was going to say anything, because then she would tell me what I can say and what I can't say. What happened was my wife and I, we were dating for a while, and she became pregnant. And don't know how that happened, but it happened. And being the Catholic boy that I was, and the morals that I was brought up with, I was going to make her an honest woman. And I told her, we're getting married, and, it's going to be great. And what happened is we got married, and it wasn't so great. It was a lot of insanity. I never lived with a woman in my whole life. And I was still real selfish and real self-centered. And she wasn't like my other girlfriend. She didn't do it my way. She had a mind of her own. And she was sober longer than I was. And so she was pretty, she had a good foundation of who she was and what she wanted out of life. And she didn't let me get away with a lot of my shit. And that made it rough for the first 9 or 10 months of my life, of my marriage. But anyway, the thing is, like I like to say about that is, I've never been loyal to a woman my whole life. I've never thought about their feelings. I've never treated women with respect ever in my life. Sometimes I don't always with my wife today, but you know what? I'm getting better at that. My sponsor's been married 33 years, and he's a good example for me. And when I'm having problems with my wife and when she's not doing it my way, I call him and I talk to him. And he tells me about his experience and what he does. And then I got another friend, Mario, who's married 20 years a couple days ago. And I ask him how to do these relationships. And what they do is they just share their experience, strength, and hope with me in that area. And I have the decision to pick up those tools. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I'm doing it more than not. But I can tell you, today my wife and I are expecting our second child. I'm excited. Life is better. Between her and I, we're becoming friends. Sometimes we don't think so, but the truth of the matter is we are becoming friends. I'm trying to add to her life. I don't always do a great job at that, but I'm becoming better at that. I can honestly say to myself and look myself in the eye today and know that I've been 100% loyal to her. My life is just working today. This is the first time I shared, and I don't know if I got anything across to you people. But, I came in here, and I came in here thinking I had life by the balls, and my life worked. And the truth of the matter is my life was a mess. I was in a lot of denial. And because I stayed here long enough, even when I didn't think I was an alcoholic, I stayed here because I honestly, deep down inside, knew that I was. And I stayed here and I picked up these tools and I got a sponsor and I worked through these steps and I found a God that I can work with and that I understand, that I got to stop worrying about me so much. And because I've done those things, my life is better than it's ever been. You know what? I want to wake up in the morning and I want to suit up and show up. A lot of times I didn't want to do that before I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is just working today. You know, it's not always great. But you know what? Whenever a problem shows itself, you know what? I got a solution to work through it. For the most part, when problems get up, I don't rip and roar through my wife's life all the time. For the most part, I don't. I don't go to the office. I work with all my sisters and brothers in the same building, and I don't go in there, and I don't rip through their lives anymore. I know I haven't asked my mom for a dime for a long time. You know, I have not tried to scream and yell and try to get help. You know, I'm financially worse off today than I've ever been in my life, and I'm okay with that. I'm taking the action that's going to get me on the other side of that. And when I get in a lot of fear about not being able to pay my bills or put food on the table for my wife and kid, you know what? I call someone up, like my sponsor, and I share the secret. And it kind of takes the power out of it. You know, before, you know what? I could never share those feelings. And here, people love me unconditionally, like my mom did. You know, and it's the best life I've ever known. You know, and it all started with one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic about his experience, strength, and hope, about his good and his bad problems, you know. And I feel comfortable talking to my sponsor. I trust the man, and I trust a bunch of other people, not a whole lot of other people in this room with my deep, dark secrets. But for my everyday problems, I feel comfortable coming in this room and grabbing almost anyone and sharing it. And it makes it just okay to get me through. You know, I try to stay in today. And when I can stay in today, I'm in God's grace. Because nothing seems to be too important. Nothing seems real overwhelming when I stay in today. And when I ask God to give me strength in the morning to work and to add to people's life instead of take from people's life, and I don't do it all the time, but I do it more times than I don't, life just seems to work. I don't know. I know that the book, the people, and the power that I've gotten in my life has made it possible to put me in a direction that I've always wanted to be, and that's to be someone that my mother and father would be proud of, and be someone that I'm going to be. When I wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, I can say, you know what, Mike, you're an okay guy, and believe it. I said it all the time when I was out there drinking and using, but I never believed it. You know, I lied to myself. You know, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, and sometimes I don't think that. But the truth of the matter is you know what, I got everything in life that I want today. Before, it was money, property, and prestige. I thought that would fix me and make me okay. And the truth of the matter is that never made me okay. I didn't know I had to look within to find that peace. And through the steps, I've been able to take a look at myself and find the character defects and ask God to remove them and give me the strength and the power to change my actions, you know, just to change that insane behavior and those things that I do. I've been praying to Him, and I've been asking for the strength, and I'm just not the same person. You know, I got everything in the world in my life right now. I wish I had a little more money, but that's okay. If you're new, and I know there's six newcomers, and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you want to get off that merry-go-round, you know, this is where I found a little peace and balance in my life. You know, I want to say something profound, but you know what? The reality is I don't have anything profound. This thing works. You know, it's been able to make me feel good about me. I've been able to find a little peace and balance, something I've always wanted in my life and never could accumulate. And today I got a little of it, and it's through the group, the book, and the God of my understanding. And I thank you, people, and I love you. Thanks.